The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
There are a few things more hilarious in the AFL world than the knee-jerk reaction after round one. So get ready to laugh, because we've got hot takes coming out like they're going out of fashion. Hello and welcome to the Fox Footy Podcast. We'll be joined by dual premiership cat Cameron Mooney to discuss that interview with Jack Watts, plus the stunning win by his former Cats as well. But for the moment, Ben Waterworth alongside the regular crew that has assembled for this week's podcast. Firstly, let's welcome a man who's graced more platforms than Matthew Mitchum, senior AFL reporter, Tom Morris.
Hello to you, Ben. I never thought Matthew Mitchum and myself would be in the same sentence, breath, paragraph, but, well, I'm honoured because he's an Australian great.
He is.
You're both incredibly graceful.
Yeah, well, let's just say if I tried to do what he did, I'd embarrass myself.
I would like to see that, actually.
No, you'll never see that, Ben.
The other voice you heard there is the AFL table's number one ticket holder, Max Lawton.
Well, it was the most exciting moment of my Monday when that site was updated for round 1 2019.
Yes.
There was a time there where the footy nerd Twitterati were very concerned that it wouldn't be updated. And then the administrator, who should be in the AFL Hall of Fame, by the way.
Yeah.
That has to
do we know who he is or she is?
I think it's a mystery to most people. Put a big banner that said, being updated, don't worry.
Yeah, okay.
Very calming.
I feel like if you're going to have an AFL Twitterati, as you called it, of nerds, you would be right at the very top of the tree. If not CEO, maybe COO, CFO.
COO.
I think I can be
Chief Operating Officer.
Yeah.
I can be a more public face, but there's some people who know this stuff 1,000 times more than I do with stats.
And maybe you're not old enough.
I can't code, for example.
HTML.
More like R. Or something. I don't know.
Like the binary system, 0100.
As much as I'd like to hear your hot takes about coding, I'd like to hear your hot takes from round
love
one.
C++.
So one of the great, as we said before, the knee-jerk reaction is one of the great things in AFL football. It's only round one, but what's your take? It's only round one, but
Fremantle can make the finals.
Can make the finals.
That's
a good take.
They're in the top two on the ladder on percentage, and the top team on the ladder after round one has made finals every year for about a decade now.
Wow.
If you didn't know. They aren't top because North kicked a few goals at the end, so GWS is holding that spot just as they did last year. But that was a Freo we have not seen in some time. Mm. And if you look at their fixture coming up over the next few weeks, it looks incredibly simple. Mm. And if you start 3-0, 4-0, you're a very good chance.
Where'd they finish last year?
13th.
Something about 13th, isn't it?
It might have been 14th on percentage. They missed out on that little buzz. But
being in that third of the ladder means that the next year your fixturing is severely aided. And we saw that with the Western Bulldogs and with Collingwood in previous years, didn't we?
Yeah, and Richmond.
Is it my go?
Yes, it's only round one, Tom, but
Two current AFL coaches will not be at their current clubs in 2020.
In 2020,
I think we saw on the weekend.
To name names?
Well, I can give you a group and you can decide who won't be there. I reckon one of, and I'm drawing a long bow with a couple of them, but hear me out. I think one of John Worsfold, Alan Richardson, Brad Scott. And who's the other one I thought of? That's three.
They were all very disappointing over the weekend, I suppose, in various regards. St Kilda winning, but not being too great.
Brennan Bolton, four. There you go. I think two of those four will not be at their current clubs in 2020.
Well, Alan Richardson's, if there was a betting market,
he's under pressure.
He would be
and
the
they won.
Odds-on favourite.
But they still missed the eight, which I like.
In an unconvincing style, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, exactly. If you win by a point against Gold Coast at home, that's as close to a loss as you can get.
I just think what happens in the coaching world, and this is anecdotally, this is speaking anecdotally based on people I speak to and sort of what I've seen in my time watching footy, which isn't that long really, Ben.
It's
certainly not
buck.
Compared to some of the other people in the office, such as Sandy Roberts, a very good man.
Yeah,
but you
compare yourself to Sandy.
You have and it's a bit like politics really. You have a period of stability where the coaches remain, and that doesn't last. Because then there's always going to be a period of upheaval where clubs make changes and they need to make changes. And last year, I think a couple of coaches were quite lucky to keep their jobs. I think Richo and Brennan Bolton were probably the main ones, but I can understand why they did. But I know Carlton weren't terrible on Thursday night. In fact, they were reasonable and they've got some good young players. But if Carlton win four or less games this year, I think Brennan Bolton's job is under serious pressure. And it doesn't mean he can't coach again, but you've got to realise the model at the moment, I think, is the Chris Fagan model for these young teams.
Yeah.
And with St Kilda and Carlton, and this is before last week's games, it just hasn't worked.
Brad Scott's an interesting one. He had that, he had that period where they made consistent preliminary finals and then
and I know he
re-signed afterwards, and he re-signed.
They've sort of
recently
decided that they want him to be the person to oversee the rebuild.
That's fine. But if they show the effort they did against Fremantle, then he won't last a year. And that is true with any coach, because that was deplorable what North Melbourne showed. And the same applies to Essendon. I think Brad Scott's highly likely to keep his job, but I don't think he's absolutely locked in if they continue to play that way.
Well, from a technically, Fremantle's win over North Melbourne was an upset, but that was one of six upsets for the weekend, which is an equal high, according to TAB.
Yes. I think it's happened seven times before since 1995, which is when betting records start.
But I saw that, but none between 2002 and 2009.
Well, that was we had a real dominant patch there where there were teams right at the top every week.
The same four teams won every week, and then
when there are eight rounds, it's hard to have six upsets.
Yeah. Eight games, yeah.
So you did a magnificent column, Tom, on foxfooty.com.au, a real Sunday night special, where you ranked the upsets in terms of the ones that surprised us most. What was the upset that surprised you the most?
Well, let's go back a step, because in your text to me, you suggested that Hawthorn and Adelaide was the biggest upset.
I thought that, yes.
Yeah, and I took that on board, and I posted in a couple of WhatsApp groups. So what do you fellas think?
It's not like you.
No. And
you're a WhatsApp specialist, has
I do say. Like WhatsApp as an app. But the Brisbane West Coast game was for me. Now, Jared Healy disagrees with this.
Yeah.
Because I spoke to him about it. But my take was West Coast won the flag last year. Brisbane finished 15th. Now, I know there were team changes on both sides. Brisbane brought in a few. In fact, their two highest possession winners and their leading goal kicker were all new additions to the club. Mm. And West Coast were missing X amount of players from their premiership, and even more players from their dominant home and away season team. But when a premier loses to the 15th place from the previous year, that is a huge upset.
In that matter,
44 points, which was the biggest upset. Biggest loss for a reigning premier in round one the following year since 1981.
Yes.
The manner in which the loss occurred, Max, was huge. I went with them number one, and I think you agreed with me based on what we spoke about.
Despite tipping it.
Yeah, I you're right. I almost tipped Brisbane as well, but an upset is against expectations.
Yes.
And a loss wasn't completely against expectations, but a 44-point defeat, I think, was completely against the grain.
Yeah, and it was 11 goals to two after quarter time.
After quarter time.
It was incredible. Yeah. For a young team like Brisbane, what we saw last year was they were in a lot of games. They were hard to beat at the Gabba in particular, but they weren't winning them. This was a team that got ahead and then didn't worry that, we're beating West Coast. What do we do now? Yeah. They just kicked away and kept playing and kept scoring.
So the reason why I thought Hawthorn was the bigger upset, and I think I'm probably coming from a perspective where I am underestimating the team that eventually won in the end. So I haven't been big on Hawthorn making the eight, and I didn't expect that to happen. And probably speaking of Brad Johnson last week on this podcast, who was convinced that they'd still be around the bottom four mark once again. But they absolutely dismantled Adelaide. One thing I didn't take into account, though, was Alistair Clarkson's excellent record over Adelaide, because Adelaide's kicking game really plays into Hawthorn's hands. But Adelaide were flat, and I think Jared Waitley's described it as just plain, vanilla.
They were vanilla. They finished 10th last year, Adelaide, and I think last year does matter in round one the following year.
Okay.
I think that does matter, not completely, but I think you have to take that into strong account, the last AFL games these teams played, or the last home and away season games these teams played.
The fact that Taylor Walker and Josh Jenkins had a combined one contested mark, zero goals won, they had no impact. Adelaide, a team that we think of as this forward dominant team from 2017, having the second lowest score for the entire round.
Yeah.
Even against Hawthorn, a team that has been a bit of a bogey side for them, as you mentioned, Ben, it's incredible to see that.
I didn't have Hawthorn Adelaide number two, though. I had the number three. Yeah. I think you could pretty much throw a blanket over these three games. Dogs, Sydney, Hawthorn Adelaide, and Melbourne, Port Adelaide. But I went with Melbourne, Port Adelaide primarily because the expectations for Melbourne were so high.
Yes.
And by and large, expectations for Port Adelaide were quite low. We had David King on the Brunch Wrap a couple of days before that on Fox Footy's Facebook page, and he said, Ken Hinckley is under more pressure than any other AFL coach, which to me said a lot. You've got, in my opinion, the best technical analyst in the AFL media, suggesting that the Port Adelaide coach is under more pressure than any other.
And he's been a big fan of Hinckley and his game style.
Exactly
for a while.
So this wasn't personal. This was just the way he saw things. Yep. And Melbourne were playing at home. Their preseason form, although not great, was okay-ish. They just lost to Brisbane and they won their first game. I think they won their first game from memory.
Can't remember off the top of my head.
Whatever it was. There wasn't bad. But I just thought this was a big, big upset in the way it transpired. And I guess the way it flipped. Look at what Port Adelaide did to Melbourne, you would have thought that Melbourne would do that to Port, who had four debutants. They had lots of young
like four that. Debutants. Yeah, yeah.
That's unbelievable how badly Melbourne played and how well Port did.
So with those upsets as well, it was always going to be interesting reading to see how the power rankings fell for foxfooty.com.au. I reckon some panellists or some judges would not change their minds too much over just one round. It is a very, very minor sample size. But as we know, the knee-jerk reaction can have a big influence. So how did that play out in the rankings?
Yeah, you sort of look at the response that we get on Facebook to any story to see what people think of it. And it was a contrast of, oh, you've gone too far, these teams are terrible, or what are you doing? Carlton did all this well and St Kilda won. How are they 17th?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you've got to take into account more than just one round of things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, Richmond's still number one. And at the start of the round, it looked like Richmond might have been one of the disappointments just because they only beat Carlton by as much as they did and it allowed the Blues to get so close.
It was
close.
A bit of a last man standing, though, wasn't it, yeah. for Richmond? It's like, well, they won and all the other guys dropped around and then they're just still standing at the end.
Four of the top five in last week's power rankings lost.
Yeah.
Three of the four preliminary finalists lost. Right?
So what order? Who are the top four?
So this week, the top four are Richmond and then GWS.
Yeah.
They were the big mover, obviously, which makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider how much people rated Essendon.
Yeah.
And, like, Fremantle belted North Melbourne, but more people had Essendon in their top eight than had North.
Yeah.
So I think you have to be, in a sense, more impressed by that. And then Collingwood and West Coast staying third and fourth, which says to me, people still believe in those teams. Let's not go crazy after round one. Yes, they had some disappointing performances, but you can't be too disappointed, really, because we know what they can be capable of.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the Giants' leap to second puts them firmly in premiership contention. I know they're quick starters, but I think the Giants are actually under less pressure this year than they have been over the last 3 years when we expected them to win two or three flags in a row.
Yeah.
No one really expects them of that this year, and beware the sleeping club in the same mould as West Coast and the Western Bulldogs and Richmond the last 3 years. No one's really expecting the Giants to perform to a high level, but there's no reason why they can't if they're all fully fit.
Yeah, a lot of people putting them sort of in the bottom half of the eight, like, yeah, they'll make it, they're good, but you don't feel that strongly.
So if the Giants move to second, where did the Bombers drop down to?
The Bombers have dropped, I'm scrolling.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah. So there's really three teams that plummeted quite a bit.
Yeah.
Sydney in 13th, yeah. Essendon 14th, and North Melbourne 15th. If you go based on performances, North Melbourne was the worst team of the weekend, arguably, but...
But can you just remind people what the power rankings is for those who may have not listened to the podcast before?
So the foxfooty.com.au experts put in their ballots, and it's sort of, how do you think the clubs are right now? Who would win a game against another team coming into the next week? Who do you think has the best potential to do well over the season? There's all sorts of criteria. It's not purely based on the ladder, because that's what the ladder's for. We're trying to sort of fix the ladder and say, like, well, Fremantle is not a top two side, really. We don't really think they're going to get in the grand final. They could, but it's unlikely. So it's sort of fixing that up.
So the way I do it is, if I put a team in fifth, I assume they will be able to beat this week, right now, all the teams sixth and below
that. Yes, you would tip them at the very least, on a neutral ground.
It's a great way to do it. It's quite Americanized, isn't it,
the power rankings? It's a very American thing that we've borrowed.
Yeah, but it's quite bland. Like, it is what it is.
So that's why Essendon 14th. I think Essendon probably could beat the Western Bulldogs or Fremantle maybe not, depending on how well they play, or Brisbane. Like, we'd certainly be willing to tip Essendon.
Where would Brisbane?
Brisbane are ninth.
So they should be.
And then
like the Lions.
Ahead of Adelaide.
I really like the Lions. Mm.
Yes.
And how much did you like how they played?
I loved it. And I was annoyed because I didn't tip them, Ben.
Yes.
I thought long and hard about it. And you know when you just hang your little mouse cursor over the little circular button and you end up just going for the West Coast. No, West Coast are the reigning premiers. That got in my mind. The number one rule of tipping, I think, is what's your initial gut feeling? Mm. And then you work back from there.
And never go back and change, because then you hate yourself.
That's true. My initial gut feeling was Brisbane. But I went with West Coast because the reigning premiers. But that's last year.
Yes.
Let's worry about it now. Yes. And West Coast had a lot of players out in the lines. Their preseason form, although you don't think it matters that much, for a young team, I think it does play a big part in how they enter round one.
Well, it did for Max, because I think you might have been the only one or one of two that tipped the Lions over the weekend.
Well done, Maxie.
And now they could be 2-0 for the first time since 2010.
Is that right?
If they beat North Melbourne on the weekend.
Favola era, was it?
Oh, a really successful era.
Yeah.
Too soon. Let's. As you were talking about, you know, the people commenting on our power rankings. One of the great things this year is that we've introduced Max's mailbag.
It's alliterative.
Do we have a sting for it?
Well, we're working on it. Producer's working on it.
Sting.
Maybe you could use the same
radio term.
Same sting as Sam's mailbag for your favourite footy show, Max.
Too soon.
I was going to use the sting from Stolen Mailbag from McAuliffe Tonight, the short-lived Sean McAuliffe Channel 9
vaguely remember
night
that.
Show, which was when he, I'm pretty sure he just read out fake letters to Getaway. which was fun.
What about the movie? You've got Mail. Is it? You got no. Tom Hanks. What's it?
Yes, you've got Mail.
Yeah, you've got Mail, and it's got the little. You've got Mail. Little sting.
Well, that was the thing from. Is it Yahoo or AIM?
AOL.
Yeah. AOL.
Sorry. AOL. Yeah, we used to dial it up. No one could be on the phone in your house while you're on the internet.
I know.
I'm trying to play Unreal Tournament, Mum. Come on.
Sorry. Anyway, let's go.
What's the Unreal Tournament? What are the people saying, Max, this week?
Well, first off, here's a question from my mum.
Nikki Lawton.
Yes.
Your favourite, Tom.
Popular.
Big fan of Nikki Lawton. Not sure she likes me too much, but that's fine.
Absolutely not.
I've never actually met her, but she's produced a good son.
Yes, right.
She's done all right. She's a big Hawks fan, by the way. Mm. Should there be an agreement on how teams communicate with their players on the grounds during matches? I saw orange boards, magnetic letters, lightning bolts, etc. From club staff. Or is it okay for each team to do it differently?
Was quite farcical, some of those scenes. Seeing Chad Corns with a 10 km/h
I disagree, Ben.
In a horizontal axis.
I disagree.
That was weird.
The game is the game. If you want to dress up as Batman on the sidelines, then be my guest. Because
do you think that's allowed to be in? Can you do that and get into a game? Or are there like Guernsey regulations?
As long as they could metal detect you, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is we get distracted with everything on the periphery of the game. The game is the game. If you want to hold up whatever sign you want, then be my guest. You're right. It does look a bit absurd initially. But you know what else looked a bit absurd initially last year? The Toyota symbol in the goal square. We got used to it very quickly. We'll get used to this very quickly.
What I don't like is them holding up the time left in the quarter.
Why?
That just sort of goes against the idea that you're not supposed to know how long.
So people,
left.
No, but the players know anyway. But is it giving it away to people at the ground?
People at the ground, as well as players,
if they
can
listen
be
to a radio.
No, but players can be informed by the runners and stuff like that. But otherwise, you don't really know.
All the players would know to the nearest minute how long was left in a quarter. That's how the word gets out very quickly. In terms of people at the ground, how many people at the ground would actually take note of Chad Corns holding up a stolen 10 km/h
Why would
sign?
You assume stolen, Tom? Come on.
We're talking about Adelaide here, are we? joking, obviously.
Bias.
No, I get what you're saying, that one of the key tenets of footy, and this is why I always like the 5-minute warning on Channel 10 when they had the rights.
This is my nostalgia for that, basically.
Yeah. is that you don't know how long left in the quarter, but for anyone to suggest the players don't know how long left to the nearest minute or at most 2 minutes, is wrong. The players always know how long was left.
Can we tie this into the sort of runner debate? Because that was one of the changes around that. Joe asks, do the new runners make AFL coaches almost redundant on game days? I think it needs to be scrapped.
Well, it's interesting sort of hearing, particularly Nathan Buckley speaking on Gerard Waitley's program on Monday morning about how in the last 5 minutes he particularly felt a little bit, well, Chris Scott in particular said he felt a bit nude.
And?
At that time.
Nude and impotent.
And was impotent, yes. That was quite an interesting...
interesting follow-on.
Yeah, not really a great visual, either one.
But Nathan Buckley also said in the lead-up to it as well that on game day there's only a certain amount that coaches can do anyway. Maybe a little bit of inspiration at quarter time and three-quarter time. Maybe the odd change that in the past has proved to be game-changing or game-winning, but really a lot of the stuff is done during the week in the lead-up, the scout report.
I agree. Have I missed something? When has the game ever been about the coaches? It's understandable the coaches would be frustrated with this because they don't have the control that they have had in the past and that every other coach in the entire country has with their teams sending out runners in club footy and VFL and junior footy. But the game is about the players, and if the coaches have less control, then so be it. It's up to the players, because the players are the game. That's just it. The coaches can throw their hands in the air and do cartwheels, but it's going to make no difference to what actually occurs.
I'm happy for it to be an advantage to be an older, more experienced team.
Yes, I agree with that.
Because otherwise you can just bring in young kids all the time and it doesn't matter. But they have that. If you have a Luke Hodge, for example, he's providing something that other players just cannot.
I'd love more clubs to do what Brisbane have done with Luke Hodge. And what Melbourne did, maybe to a lesser extent, with a Jordan Lewis or a Bernie Vincent, bring in an older player to help that process. The conduit between the coach and the players is so important. Let the players do it.
Maximum Gornography writes, do you fellas believe that Fremantle's rebuild is nearly complete and their victory over North is a sign of things to come, or are North just that bad?
It's only round one, but that is a terrible overreaction.
No, it's both. It's a great sign, but your rebuild, I think, is only actually complete when you play in a grand final. Until then, you are, like, I think Melbourne is still at the very latter stages of their rebuild.
Yeah, if they don't win a flag, you could say, in a sense, that rebuild was a failure.
Yeah, but I think if you get to the last day of the season, then your rebuild is complete.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think I think we'd all agree Fremantle's a fair way off that.
I think so as well. Yes. I'd see Fremantle play against Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval. That's got that kind of game is where I think, or I'd probably like to get some kind of judgment again on the Dockers.
The Daniel Pearce Cup.
It would be, yes. Yeah. Well pointed out.
That was...
Jared Schofield.
My most surprising result was probably Port beating Melbourne because of how much I believe in Melbourne. My second most was Freo beating North to the manner
by
in which
that
they
much,
did.
Yeah.
Because you look, it was a 110-point turnaround from last year. North won by 5 goals at Optus Stadium last year. Mm. North just looked appalling. Mm. You know, some of their kids looked okay, but there are questions over whether the absence of Jared Waite really leaves them waiting in the forward line.
I like North, not ideal. But their preseason mantra that everyone's out to get them, we're going to prove everyone wrong, you guys don't know what you're talking about, was completely disproportionate to where they finished the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That they have not been a good side for the last couple of years. Well, so don't go telling us that we're wrong, that we don't rate you. You prove to us that you're good, and then we'll start rating you.
They already proved people wrong by finishing ninth.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Now, if we're saying it again, do that. But I think it was more people just thinking, North will be okay, but great. And they disappointed to that.
Yeah.
Harrison Callaghan. What is your rationale behind the inconsistencies of the MRP's decisions? MRO, of course, Harrison.
Yes.
Seems ludicrous following their spiel of how punching is so bad.
So, and to put some context around this, so Liam Jones in the first game on Thursday night got away with a fine for a hit to the tummy off the ball. Ben Cunnington then, I think, was probably the biggest talking point out of the weekend, where he hit a Fremantle player in the middle of the ground, really off the ball, and escaped with a fine as well. Now, I think Michael Christian had a bit of a right of reply on SEN on Tuesday morning, talking about the actual MRO guidelines for suspension haven't changed that much. It's actually that there's now a free kick will be paid when that kind of incident happens. So that's changed. The actual MRO guidelines for an incident like the tummy tap hasn't changed that much, I don't think has been communicated that well.
No, I agree with you there, and I'm glad Michael Christian said that. We saw in the St Kilda game there was a free kick. Can't remember the players involved for a tummy tap, for lack of a better term. And if I'm an umpire, I'm paying it every single day of the week. There's no need to do it. Mm. Don't hit someone in the stomach. It can really hurt there, especially if you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I think Michael Christian feels handcuffed by the guidelines or the formula that he's been presented as the MRO. And I still think the Liam Jones should have been medium, not low impact.
And that's been the discussion since it's been the level of impact, low v medium. There seems to be, for a lot of people, that seems to be a bit of a grey area.
Paul Roos spoke about it on the couch and he's spot on. Yes, use the medical report, but use your eyes first. Watch the incident, assess it, and then use the medical report to back up or dismiss whatever you've watched. Jack Riewoldt didn't go off the ground. I was there. But he was out of play for a good, I'm saying a few minutes, maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes. That can be the difference between you losing or winning a game.
But that's been the case for a couple of years now, though, is that the MRO has been going predominantly off the medical report and the result. So there would have to be a change in thinking in the middle of the season for that to happen. It makes a lot of sense, Tom. But at the moment, the MRO just seems very steadfast on using results and medical reports.
I get that. Use the medical reports, and as I said, but use it secondary. So you don't have to actually say anything. You don't have to be transparent and tell the fans or tell supporters, this is the percentage to which we're using the medical report. You say, we're still using the medical report, but you know, as Michael Christian, that you're watching that incident and your eyes are assessing it before any doctor's report is.
Just stop punching.
Yeah, that would help.
It's a reasonably simple solution to the whole thing. We've got one from Eurodez. Tom, very positive one about you. Has Tom nothing better to do with a full weekend's footy being played than to trawl St Kilda, like physically, over a simple restructure of their leadership group?
Trawl St Kilda.
Like walk around it, I think he...
Yeah.
He means troll.
And also, this context, you broke a story on Monday night saying that Dan Hannanbury had quietly walked away from the club's leadership group.
Yeah, so some context around it is that Dan Hannanbury was asked, does he mind being away from the leadership group for a while? And he said, no, that makes sense, while he focuses on his recovery. In terms of a simple leadership group change, in many ways it's an oxymoron, because this was absolutely not simple. And also, it's a footy story. Mm. So if anyone thinks this is not a footy story, then I'm not sure what game we're playing. Because the reality is Dan Hannanbury was brought in for two things: to play footy and play good footy, and for his leadership. And at the moment, he's not doing either. And that's just the reality of the situation. The other thing is, it's not simple, because Alan Richardson had a chance on radio on Friday morning to mention it. He didn't. And they spoke ad nauseum about Hannanbury and St Kilda. And then after the game against Gold Coast, he had a chance to mention it. They didn't. So the club didn't get on the front foot in mentioning it. Therefore, it's not simple. Therefore, thanks for your question, but you're off the mark.
Here we go. Off the mark. One more on St Kilda, just on the footy side of things. Should they be worried, this is from Macca, should they be worried that they couldn't put away a team that will all in all likelihood finish bottom four, or was it a sign that the Suns' future is looking promising?
I think it kind of played out how expected. I probably expected St Kilda maybe to win by another couple of goals, but I just in round one, I just had a feeling that Gold Coast would be coming out with a bit of venom. There were some concerning signs that they couldn't put the Suns away in that second quarter, particularly when David Swallow, who I think showed his value as a very good player on the weekend, pushed forward under some big injury duress on his knee, and he's a chance to play this weekend, which is good news. But the fact that the Saints couldn't put the Suns away at that point, I think, was a bit concerning.
It's worse
as well
for the Saints than it is for the Suns.
Gosh, they needed that win, though, because their draw coming up is very, very difficult. And if they hadn't have won that game, it would have been a pretty dire outlook, I think, for St Kilda over the next 2 months.
Sorry to interrupt. It just delays the inevitable pressure that's going to come by 1 week, I think.
It's a bit of a false dawn. You
know, yeah, a little bit.
Some good signs from the Suns. I think some of the young kids play quite well.
And young Parker was good for the Saints.
And then one more on one of the other big teams to get an upset win on the weekend, the Bulldogs.
Yes.
Luke says, how big a difference does a fully fit Bont make to the Dogs' fortunes, and what did you think of Tim English?
So I think Bont sort of put himself right into Brownlow contention. He's always been around the outskirts for
still
the
past just three votes.
Years.
It's only round one.
I know, yes, but
he's leading.
He is leading. I think he's a bit fitter than what he has been in the past couple of years. And he's just got an extra year of experience under his belt. I think if the Dogs do win, you know, a decent amount of games, I still don't think they will. I did tip the Dogs to beat Sydney because I don't rate Sydney that much. Mm. But if they do win a couple of games, Bont's got potential to win some awards this year. Tim English has got ample potential, I think. He's still a bit of a beanpole, but his athleticism. We've got to remember, this guy had like a 10 to 15 centimetre growth spurt when he was 19. So he was essentially a midfielder for all his junior career, then had this random growth spurt in his late teens, turned into a ruckman, picked up as a 19-year-old, and I think the Dogs are going to benefit from it.
It's lucky they play under the roof at Marvel because he'd blow away in the wind. That's how skinny he is. Yeah, but you're right, he's a good player.
I mean, you wouldn't be able to see him in the sun and shade because of all that.
What's next?
Yeah, no, good work from you, Max.
That's all about the read. That's all about the listeners.
That's a good mailbag. But it is now time to have a look back at round one. It was a big weekend on Fox Footy, and a man who was front and centre right across the weekend from Friday through to Sunday was dual premiership cat and, of course, co-tipping leader at the moment in the Fox Footy tipping competition alongside our own Tom Morris with five tips. Hello, Cameron Mooney.
Co-leading, geez, you other guys must have had a real horrible.
We did.
They set a low bar.
We did. You and Tom top scored with five each over the weekend.
At least we're front runners, Tommy. That's nice.
That's right. We've got a few flanks between us.
Who would know after what that weekend was?
When you look at the whole of round one, Moons, how much do you read into it? Are there certain things that you take out of it and think, oh, no, this is pretty real, to take an AFL 360 term, or is there stuff where you think that's just a bit of an overreaction, or you can easily see an adjustment down the track?
No, I think, and we say it every year, and I think every year it does become closer and closer. We say the teams are becoming closer. The league is becoming closer. A day off, you know, West Coast, even though they played some kids, all of those type of things, they were across the other side of the country. But you know, you have an off day, you know, I really think most teams could just about win a game. You know, there's a couple of teams in there that even on an off day, they're probably not going to beat the better teams. But the competition is getting closer. It really is, and it's great to watch.
One of the, supposed surprise results from the weekend was the game that you covered on Saturday between Port Adelaide and Melbourne with the Power getting up. But I suppose what's been replayed above all from that game so far was your really powerful interview with Jack Watson. You've been rightly lauded for how you conducted yourself, and Jack's been rightly lauded for how he conducted himself as well. Just, I suppose, take our listeners and us behind the scenes of about how that interview came to fruition. Did you personally want to speak to him, or was it a word from the producer? And then sort of what you were feeling as he was basically pouring his heart out to you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the kind words. But it was more about because he was playing against his old team.
Mm.
I mean, I think we're forgetting that with all that's gone on over the weekend and been said and done, he actually played a ripping game. He was one of the best on ground. And the fact that he's come up against his old side, that was probably more of my talking point with him, or more the point where I wanted to talk to him about. You know, you're playing against the old mob, you beat them round one at the MCG, you played a really... that's fantastic. But then as I just grabbed him, I remember, I thought, oh, you know what? He's had a really horrible summer. So I thought, well, you might as well just start with a Jack, great win. You know, how you feel? And it went from there. Mm. So what people say, you know, you really did really well at the questioning. It was really just one simple question, and it was all about Jack just getting everything off his chest, I guess, and good on him for doing it. I thought it was very powerful from him, and it was fantastic.
Moons, it's caught the attention of the entire AFL world, which is, you're right, a credit to him and you for getting those answers out of him. But at what point did you think that he actually is getting quite emotional here, which is pretty rare after a home and away season win,
isn't it? Round one.
Mm.
Yeah, well, when we first started, he goes, yeah, you know, it's been tough. And he kind of took a deep breath. And I think I said, I can see the weight's been taken off your shoulders. And you could see him then just exhale and go, you know what, it has. And then he started talking about, and which I had no idea. I don't think anyone really had idea, probably the feedback that he'd been copping for most of the summer. And then the fact that he came out and said, you know, I've copped a lot of shit, in his words. And, you know, I've copped a lot of it over my career, but nothing was compared to what I've just copped over the last couple of months. And as he was getting through that, you know, couldn't get out of bed for a couple of weeks. And you could see the lips starting to quiver, Tommy. And I went, oh, geez, I've made another one cry. Here we go. but as he was saying it, I was just thinking to myself, because I actually went through the Brendan Goddard one a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, because I felt like I left BJ hanging a little bit after he kind of broke down. So I always said to myself, well, if I get into another situation, I'll just say, you know, take your time. It's okay. And I think that gave him a little bit of time just to breathe again. And I thought to myself, well, there's no point continuing on with it and keep trying to poke the bear. So we just moved on and we went for a walk, and you know, there was just basically a footy chat in the end. So that was really nice. But good on him for getting it off his chest, because a lot of people wouldn't know. And look, at the end of the day, he brought it on himself. He, you know, his words, he's embarrassed himself, his family, his footy club, along the way over the last couple of months. But he's taken ownership and he put his hand up, and, you know, I applaud him for that.
Moons, he was a really big part of Port's win that day, as you sort of said before. What really stood out to you more from that game? Was it Port Adelaide being better than we expected, or Melbourne being worse?
I was very, very disappointed with what Melbourne dished up. I'm a big believer if you go, and I've tipped Melbourne to win the premiership this year. I think they're in a really good spot. Their list is fantastic. But you've got to be, to win a premiership, in my opinion, and I've been in a great side, and I've come up against another great side in Hawthorn and the Brisbane Lions when they were at their peak, and they were just nasty bastards, to put it frankly, and we were that as well. And I was disappointed that I didn't see any of that nastiness from Melbourne. They got pushed around. They allowed Max Gorn to get pushed around. So I was really disappointed with the way they handled it. In saying that, it's amazing what happens when you throw some young kids in. And when you put young kids into a team like Port did, and they can either go both ways. They can give you nothing because they're nervous, or they can give you a ball of energy. And these kids gave them a ball of energy. And I honestly believe, I think most people thought, on the back of those boys really turning it on late in that first quarter, getting involved, that's probably where the game turned. So I was wrapped for Port Adelaide. That's a massive win. And even Kenny after the game, I saw him in the room. And very rarely do you see coaches get really emotional, but he was just very, very emotional on the ground and in the room. So it meant it was a big, big win for the footy club.
Yeah, and Ken Hinckley said it's the best win he's ever been involved in, which I think surprised a few people, given that he's led the club to finals victories as well. Moons, you've played in several grand finals and as a result have had to get yourself up for round one the next year. The devil's advocate, or the, I guess the defence for some Melbourne people, is that they haven't quite got over of a pretty taxing September last year. They've had 15 off-season surgeries, whereas Port were primed for this after not playing finals. How difficult is it, or how big a discrepancy is it between teams that don't play finals and teams that do go deep into finals to play against each other in round one the following season?
I don't think it's the lack of pre-season. I think you hit it on the head there, Tommy. It's the amount of injuries and operations they had. And I won't mention his name, but I spoke to a Melbourne official, and I said, you know, you must be pretty confident. You boys are looking good. And he goes, actually, I'm pretty nervous because I'm not sure if we're fit enough on the back of those injuries and those operations. And I thought, oh, okay, I didn't really understand that they had that many. And then after looking at it later on, I thought, yeah, you're right, they did have a lot. And he was right. In the end, they probably got caught out a little bit through the lack of pre-season, through a lot of their guys and lack of game time with Viney and Jones and all those type of guys as well. And look, I'm not stressed about where Melbourne will be in 3 weeks and in 3 months' time. I think they'll be fine. But just from a off-the-mark point of view, yeah, it was a very slow jump for them, I thought.
So take us inside a footy club for round one, because we get accused, I say the we, the media gets accused every single year at round one for placing too much of an emphasis on the season opener. But it seems as if Simon Goodwin and Melbourne, by playing Jack Viney, Nathan Jones, maybe Jake Milksham to a lesser extent, just Max Gawn and no other ruckman, did place a huge emphasis on round one, perhaps more so than what they would have in a regular season game beyond that, by allowing someone like Jack Viney to play, who was coming off very little game time and also some poor form.
Look, I'm big on round one, Tommy, to be honest. Yep. I really am. A lot of people say, oh, round one doesn't matter. It's huge. I mean, this could be the stepping stone for Port Adelaide to really launch into another good year. Could be the stepping stone for Brisbane, who might be chock-block full of confidence. I think they come down to Melbourne this week and play North Melbourne. You know, all of a sudden, they might be 2-0. What a magnificent start. So the start of the season, I remember talking to Bomber Thompson about this years ago when we were playing, and our fitness advisor at the time was like, don't worry about the start, we'll be fit by this round. And Bomber was like, no, we want to be fit for round one, because if we get off to a poor start, we could be 0-3 before we know it, and your season's over. Well, you know, you're really pushing, you know what, uphill to try and make that eight. So the start of the season is important. I don't care what anyone says. I'm really big on round one, getting that win and getting your season off to a really good start.
Moon's last one. Could round one be the start of something special for your former club? We're all about objectivity at Fox Footy, but you couldn't help but give a couple of fist pumps at the end of Geelong's win over Collingwood.
We've already won the premiership.
I suppose looking at it on Friday night, watching the game, with those four young guys coming in, Dalhouse and Rowan playing their roles really, really well, it looked like a team that would have been much more competitive against Melbourne in the elimination final last year and really taken it up to them. What were some of the bigger positives you took out of Geelong's win on Friday?
Well, the biggest positive was, and again, you know, with our job, we get to go into the rooms after and talking to a lot of the officials and coaches. It's a forward line that Geelong hasn't seen probably as far as pressure. We're talking back when we were playing in premierships with guys like Shannon Burns, Travis Barker, Matty Stokes, who are these guys running around the forward line putting enormous pressure on. So guys like me didn't have to chase. You know, now you've got, all of a sudden you've got, you know, Tommy's not a chaser, he's not a tackler, but you've got Dalhouse, you've got Rowan, you've got Myers. All of a sudden you've got this forward line, and even the back spoke about the fact that for the first time in a long time, the ball wasn't coming back out quickly and they had confidence in coming off their man or setting up where they needed to set up, or well, more of a point, just getting a rest every now and then. So that, to me, is what the biggest thing for Geelong was, is that forward line pressure, locking the ball in. I know they didn't score a lot in the first quarter, but they had it in there 17 times, and it stayed down there a lot. And they probably just held on in the second quarter, which they were pretty lucky not to be probably 3 or 4 goals down at half-time, to be honest. But just by having that pressure, it allowed them to stay in the game at half-time. Now, they really took control of the game. So for me, it would be the smaller guys running around there and putting some decent pressure on, which Geelong hasn't had for a while.
Some good signs there for the Cats. And we'll be seeing you, Moons, this weekend. You're doing the Port Adelaide Carlton game and then back for Bounce, and your Doctor of Numerology certificate will come in.
What are the chances of Jack coming near me this weekend?
hopefully
he might want to come near me.
He was fantastic in round one, and hopefully he's great for round two. Moons, really appreciate your time. Good luck for round two.
Good on you, boys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much to Cameron Mooney for joining us. Great to get an insight on that interview in particular with Jack Watson. Really interesting about a lesson that he learned from a media perspective about when he dealt with Brendan Goddard a couple of years ago when BJ was quite
clearly
emotional.
I remember that very clearly.
Mm. Yeah, so good stuff there. Now it's time for Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
Nah.
You can say... No, fair or farce, try and understand it.
Oh, my God. Jesus. Yeah. Not bad for a trombone player. Now,
and the thing, Tom was singing in the office and didn't want to contribute there.
I was.
Disappointing. We'll get you
Amy
one day.
Shark. Ben, fair or farce, man-catting is against the spirit of cricket.
Oh, Jesus.
Farce. Be in your crease, Tom. Why can't cricketers at the non-strikers end understand this? You've got to be out of your crease once the ball has left the bowler's arm. Be in your crease.
What's what? happened?
Stuff
the spirit of the game in this instance.
Yeah, I agree. Play the laws of the game.
But didn't he stop bowling and then that was the problem in this
scenario? Yeah, the umpire's probably made a mistake, I think. But the spirit of cricket's absurd, by and large. Unless there's no laws that... Anyway, we could go on forever. This is a footy podcast. Max.
Yes, you would happily go on forever.
I would. That's the Fox Cricket podcast. Make sure you tune in over the summer. Max, fair or farce, have you got a deep-seated vendetta against Carlton and its fan base? Fair or farce? You have a deep-seated vendetta against Carlton and its fan base.
Fair. I hate them with every bone of my body ever since I was a child.
Can I give some background here?
I'm jealous of all the success they've had since my birth.
You had a run-in with a few Carlton fans over the weekend. Okay, so it was pretty unsavoury initially, but you've handled it very well.
Thank you. So people who don't follow me would not know the tone of voice that I sometimes use in my tweets, which is
satirical.
Satirical, joking, sarcastic, you know.
Sometimes egging you on to use a, you know, an egg boy type.
Oh, it's very, very topical from you, Tom. Yeah. Thank you. And so I suggested when Carlton was down by, six goals in the first quarter against Richmond, just a reminder that they had traded around their first round pick to trade up for Liam Stocker in the draft, who is still maturing, not yet in consideration for the best 22. Just putting it out there.
It's going to be a narrative all year, by the way. Mm. You say it's a joke.
Many years.
But it's going to be a narrative all year if Adelaide get a top... Well, they're going to get a high pick. If they get number one pick, it's going to be amazing.
So the Carlton people seem to think this was a go at them that I'd been saving up. I've been thinking this since draft night. Mm. You know,
and so has everyone.
Yeah, most people have been saying it was either brave or a bit silly, depending on how you weigh up the draft picks and all of that stuff. So to put that out there and then get the response from Carlton fans of, oh, how dare you. So, what, are you going to not finish in the bottom four, Carlton fans?
No, it was more personal than that, but you handled it very well, Max. Well done.
That was a problem. Plenty of people getting blocked as they deserve.
Yeah, see, I don't block people, but you're a blocker.
I wasn't a blocker, but, you know, when you get random abuse for...
Sort of like how you play cricket at the top of the order as well. You just sort of slash your outside of the off stump. No defensive blocks for you.
Whereas I scored four for my entire cricket career. So
Ben, all through third man. Ben, fair or farce?
Yes. Accurate.
Alex Rance will never be the same player again.
No, that's a farce. You're a bit
affronted by that, aren't you?
Alex Rance is a superstar, and it has to be said that I still think Richmond can win the flag. There are a couple of people. David King is pretty big, I think, on that the Tigers can't win the flag this year without Alex Rance. But I think Rance can come back. Wasn't it fascinating the perspective he had in his post-match interview after the game? And Rance has always been a little bit different to the normal footballer in terms of the perspective and how he looks at life I think he'll come back pretty healthy, and I still think pretty motivated to be the best he can.
Max, why am I asking questions here? Max, fair or farce? If North finish bottom two, Brad Scott should lose his job.
Farce, because they've sort of decided already that he's the man to look after this rebuild of sorts. So we thought ninth was an overperformance last year. If they finish bottom two, which I really don't think they'll do, would be a massive disappointment, and they'd have to consider it. But it also depends on who you can get to fill that spot.
I think it's a fair question, though, considering how hard they went at the trade table during the offseason.
I hope North are better, but the weekend filled me with very little confidence.
Tips and cups time. Now, first, I'd like to get an AFLW grand final tip.
Yes.
Adelaide and Carlton playing each other on Sunday. And now, we could have spent a whole podcast on this, the AFLW grand final being on a Sunday, not a Saturday. But this is for the Sophie Lee Cup, and Sophie Lee's doing some nice work there at the Adelaide Crows.
We have AFLW Cups. Yeah. The league has arrived.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are you tipping, Max?
I'm tipping Adelaide because they've been the best team all year. But I think Carlton is closer to Adelaide than people think. They got within two goals and they played in round two.
Yeah,
and
Taylor Harris, very entertaining game.
Taylor Harris didn't play that week. Yeah. And Carlton's been improving since then. They really should have won.
They lost their first two, didn't they?
They lost their first two, which were to North and Adelaide. And they lost to Geelong in a game that they really shouldn't have lost. Taylor Harris missed I would have kicked it. And that's how simple it was. So they really should have won that game. And they should have won five, six in a row now. And they comprehensively beat Freo.
They did.
Really put to bed the whole thing of, yes, they did get a home final when they probably shouldn't have based on their win-loss record. But the home ground advantage did not make up for how much they dominated Fremantle by in that game. So they're in it, but I do think the Crows should win.
Adelaide wins by a goal.
Adelaide wins by a goal.
I hope Carlton wins, though, because I think Daniel Harford's terrific.
Both grand finals in the past two seasons have been absolute thrillers, both of them. So hopefully we get that
good
on.
Good weather. I want good
weather. Yeah, I was going to say, wet weather last time really hurt that one.
AFL round two action kicks off Thursday night. The Andrew Cracker Cup between Richmond and Collingwood. By the way, the cups this week are unbelievable.
Some of the games.
Yes.
Which really helps.
I don't know who to tip in this game. I'm going to wait for Max.
I'm going to tip Richmond. I do think they are... I mean, I had them higher on my ladder going into this season. I think they're probably a better side overall. Collingwood probably... Well, not as disappointing as many people thought last week, but and they're right in it.
They were scratchy, though, weren't they?
It's like a 55-45 game, and I'll say the Tigers.
Yeah, I'm the Tigers.
I'm the Tigers as well. The Ryan Fitzgerald Cup.
Yes.
Fitzy shamelessly promotes this as well every year. The Sydney Swans hosting Adelaide, and gosh, the Swans were poor against
Crows,
the Dogs.
Crows, for me. They won there last year at the SCG, I think.
They
the
did
Crows.
Too, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think they are more – who's more likely to rebound, a good team or an ordinary team? A good team. And yeah. I think Adelaide's a good team. I think the Swans are an ordinary team.
So halftime of the Swans-Dogs game, the Swans had kicked 5 goals in their previous 6 quarters, dating back to the elimination final. Really bad scenes. I'm tipping the Crows as well. The winner will be the groundskeeper if the SCG turf holds up.
Oh, gosh, that's going to be a story to follow this weekend. Essendon and St Kilda for the James Gwilt Cup.
Can you have a rebound game after you won last week?
Oh, what was my rebound theory last year? No, Essendon.
That's again.
Essendon. It's sort of, yeah, Essendon. Yeah. Essendon will win this.
St Kilda, St Kilda look really bad.
Yeah, Gold Coast, I think, are terrible, and St Kilda are
slightly better.
Minutely above that.
And Essendon, we think, should be better. I don't know what their problems were. There was a lot of clips that people aired on the Monday night shows of Zach Merritt not having much effort. Stuff like that, that has to be improved. They should just win on talent alone. Yeah.
Port Adelaide and Carlton for Port. Barnaby French Cup.
No, I love Barnaby. Not Barnaby Joyce.
Thank you, Tom, for clarifying.
Yep.
You're not doing the Blues double in Adelaide this weekend or something?
Move along, Port.
I'm also going to say Port.
My absolute favourite cup of all time, the Clint Bizzle Cup for Geelong and Melbourne, the former high flyer.
I'm going to go for Melbourne here, Ben.
The Demons.
I think Melbourne on this rebound theory have a point to prove, and also they've got good memories there. Max Gorn first put his name up in lights with a performance at GMHBA.
Yeah, he did.
And I think the Cats were good last week, but I just think Melbourne win.
I'm tipping Geelong. They did win their last year in this corresponding fixture, of course, which was a very close one, the Zach Tui goal, getting things over the line. So I would imagine the Cats.
West Coast and the Giants, Jonathan Giles Cup.
West Coast.
I think West Coast bounces back. They're still too good.
The Paul Spargo Cup, North Melbourne and Brisbane. Paul, the father of Charlie Spargo.
Brisbane for me, Ben. Yes. I rate the Lions.
Yep. I would have picked the Lions regardless of last week's results.
The Wade Skipper Cup, Hawthorn v the Western Bulldogs.
Hawthorn.
Hawks.
And then Gold Coast and Fremantle for the Greg Broughton Cup.
This could be a belting at this point.
Nah, Fremantle.
This could be a belting. Fremantle could win this by 60.
Quite possibly. Good podcast, guys.
I thought so.
We'll see you next week on the Fox Footy podcast. Remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.